lawyer talk off the record on the air. We are going to do some Q&A stuff. We've got Troy with me. He's got the, we got our iPads, we've got the laptops, and we've got lots of questions and comments coming from the various videos we've been posting. So we're going to call this like a little fireside chat Q&A session, lawyer talk style. Lay it on me, man. And by the way, I'm just taking these as they come. We are not preparing.
Yeah. So the first one comes from Emily Nett. This is YouTube. She says, can you elaborate on what makes the case very complicated when the prosecution has essentially a full confession via the shooter's text messages? Tying the gun to the bullet and the shooter to the gun slash location should be, foreseeably speaking, pretty straightforward unless there's a debate on even those points. She's talking about the Tyler Robinson.
Tyler Robinson, Charlie Kirk assassination. Yeah. And I think I made a comment. What she's getting at is I made a comment when we first did a breakdown of this, that this was a complicated case. I was talking about what the lawyers are signing up for. It's a good question because, you know, on the face of it, it does seem like it's pretty straightforward. They've got this guy, they've got him behind the, or they got his fingerprints on the gun, allegedly. They've got DNA and everything else. What makes it complicated is really, there's multiple things that make it complicated, but let's start at the fundamental level. Every time we take on a case on behalf of a client, we're obligated to actually do the work. I mean, just because it looks like it, a duck and quacks like a duck and, you know, the old saying, we still have to verify that it's a duck. And think of all the levels of scientific evidence in this case. You've got fingerprint evidence, and I get it, that's pretty established, but you still have to look at it. Mm-hmm. You've got DNA evidence, and you know well now that when we get a DNA case, the first thing we do...
Get the bench notes.
We get the bench notes. We hire an expert. We get the lab records. Because just because the police and the prosecutor says there's DNA there doesn't mean that our guy is guilty. And look, this is not a defense of Tyler Robinson. I'm not commenting on that case. We're talking generally here.
So
I get DNA evidence, and if I'm representing Robinson, I'm going to want to know, does the DNA establish what the probable cause statement says it does? In other words, just because his DNA is on the gun, Tyler Robinson's DNA is, does that mean he pulled the trigger? And is there a way that the DNA evidence or Tyler or DNA matching Tyler Robinson or attributable to Tyler Robinson, better put, could have gotten there in some other way? You know, you have to uncover those stones, particularly in this kind of case.
Yeah, and one thing that she talked about that we actually talked about this upstairs when this case was going on. I even asked this question, was the text messages.
Yes.
And you were making a good, I was confused, and you kind of like enlightened me that like, you ever think maybe it's not his like partner or whatever that's sending the text messages, and how like these could be cops sending the text. And I never even thought about that. I thought the texts were just basically,
and they may be,
yeah,
we don't know. And we were just speculating at the time because this was stuff was breaking news. But you're talking about the text messages from Robinson's cohort. We'll call him. Whatever pronoun the cohort wants to use.
I'm sorry, I was trying to figure out which one to use. I just couldn't figure it out.
Whatever. I don't care. You first want to verify the validity of those text messages. But beyond that, there's all this other chatter in the internet ether of other possible people who knew about it. And, you know, there was probably Discord chat and some others at the time I remember coming out. And, you know, there's going to be subpoenas for all that information. And as you know, once you get that kind of information, that sort of forensic stuff, it's a complicated hornet's nest. And I'm not saying at the end of the day this is going to yield any fruit, but you have to look at it. And I think ultimately the point we're trying to make here, and well, one more thing, this is a death penalty case. And you've got a client who is likely, if he's convicted, to face a death penalty. You don't leave stones unturned in a case like that. And his lawyers will not. I am very confident we'll do all the work. But once you add death penalty to the equation, you have like two phases. You've got what we would call, or what the system calls, the guilt phase, or what the death penalty advocates would call the innocence phase. And if your client's convicted, then you go to the penalty phase where the prosecution has to establish whatever criteria is necessary to impose a death penalty, legally speaking, like the type of crime, et cetera. But then it usually goes to this next thing, like, should the person actually die? What are the redeeming qualities of this person? Are there circumstances where even though it's eligible for death penalty, you shouldn't impose it? And typically this involves getting something called a mitigation expert, we would hire somebody, and I'm sure their lawyers have hired somebody, typically a psychologist, social worker, somebody like that, and maybe some other, a whole team, mm-hmm. whose job it is to dig into the past, the history, the psychology, whatever they can, and they'll give us a report or give the lawyers a report about all the possible arguments in favor or disfavoring the death penalty or in favor, whatever you would get. But and then finally, and this is the point I think I was going to make a minute ago, everybody's watching. Mm. Everybody's watching. You're on Front Street. If you're defending this case, you're on Front Street. You are not going to screw with this. You're going to do everything you possibly can to make sure that the government does its job. And look, we all have our feelings about this case one way or another. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you don't, but the two sides are obvious. You got the one side that says, fry the guy. You got the other side that says, well, you know, after all, Kirk was a horrible guy.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the Mangione type folks.
Yeah.
I'm not taking a position on that. But this case is in the spotlight. And when cases like this get in the spotlight, you have to do everything you can to defend the guy. And if it's the hue and cry is, we don't like this guy, he's horrible. And if you go back in history, think like the Lindbergh kidnapping and some other, like the biggest case in history. Go read your history books.
Okay.
Leopold and Loeb. I mean, some of these big cases. These are the cases that I think require us as criminal defense lawyers to, I guess, really, really, really do our job, meaning hold the government accountable. Because when there is a hue and cry, when there is an outrage by the public, that is when you need to create the bulwark the most. Because if you let down your guard in these types of cases, it will be gone in other cases. Mm. It is really easy to say, well, we all know this guy's guilty. We all know he's a rotten SOB. We all know that he deserves to die. So let's just skip to the end and do it. As the defense lawyers, our job in the system to make the system work. And what I mean is, so the system works when you are wrongfully accused of something, we have to make sure they check all the boxes and do what they're supposed to do. And when the worst of the worst is wrongfully accused or is rightfully accused of something. And there's a, I think it was A Man of All Seasons. There's a great quote, but anyway, we can dig into it. But the point is that you don't get rid of, you don't get rid of the protections of the law because you hate somebody. Because as the quote goes in that scene, the devil will eventually turn back on you and there will be no protections for you. So that's why it's a complicated case. Forensically, legally, death penalty wise, and then public outrage wise, you got a big job to do. And time. It's just going to take time.
Yeah.
So look, great question, great comment. Thanks for listening. If you've got your own question, you want to submit it right in the comments, or you can go to lawyertalkpodcast.com, send a question there. There's a little interface you can use. Till next time, Q&A style, we'll be back. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.